In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, one God. Amen. Well, today we have the secular celebration of Valentine's Day. But of course, as Christians, we're well aware of the fact that this secular celebration, like so many of our society's secularized celebrations, has its foundations in the Christian faith. We know about Saint Valentine. This Saint Valentine, who was a martyr in Rome in the year 270, and has been commemorated on February 14th, historically in the Western Church, is commemorated on July 6th in the Orthodox Church. Unfortunately, that commemoration and that saint have all but been forgotten in the West and in our culture, in our society. But we should know about Saint Valentine. Saint Valentine was a priest, and there were others with the same name, Valentine or Valentinos, but the one who's commemorated historically on this day in the West is Saint Valentine the Presbyter, or the priest. And what he's known for, other than being a martyr, is for having conducted weddings for young people who came to him wanting to get married, Christians wanting to get married, at a time when the pagan emperor, the Roman emperor, Claudius II, had forbidden young men to get married until after they had served their time in the military. And he was conducting a war, and he wanted those men not to be distracted by wives and families and this kind of thing. He wanted them to come and to serve him and to serve in the war. And this was drawn out and drawn out, and there were these young men who had young beloveds, their fiancés, and they wanted to get married. And so they came secretly to Saint Valentine, Saint Valentinus, and he secretly conducted their weddings. Well, the emperor got wind of this, the pagans heard about this, and Saint Valentine was brought to trial, and he was beheaded, he was martyred. And really, he was a martyr for the sanctity of Christian marriage. But he saw it as worthwhile, worth even taking the risk of being put to death for it, to bless marriages, to give God's blessing to Christian marriages, to say, this is blessed by God, and that God is the foundation of this relationship, of this marriage, of this family, this new family. So he was a martyr for the sanctity of marriage. He was a martyr for the sanctity of the family. And he suffered for it. And although he suffered for it, we still have this remembrance of a saint who blessed marriage. Now, obviously, this holiday, Valentine's Day, has morphed into something very different. And that can be seen just like, with Easter, you see all these bunny rabbits and things like that that have nothing to do with the resurrection of Christ. And this holiday, you see what? Cupids everywhere, right? Little cupids with their bows and their arrows, little chubby babies with wings. And what's Cupid? Who's Cupid? Well, Cupid is the Roman pagan god of love. And the Greek counterpart is Eros. Eros, E-R-O-S, from which we get the word erotic. And there's nothing more misunderstood than Eros in our society. But of course, what we have here is a paganization of this holiday, where the emphasis is now on sort of the passion of Eros. But how do we as Christians understand Eros? What is this worship of this pagan god of Eros or Cupid, what is that a distortion of? What's the true thing? Because there's always a true thing that gets twisted and distorted in pagan practice. in the secularization of society, turning things into idols, because this is what's happened. Well, the truth is that God has planted this ability of the soul within us. He's planted this kind of love, eros, within every human soul. And what is the purpose of this love? Well, certainly, there is a drawing together that exists between husband and wife. That's part of God's design. That's true. But first and foremost, what is eros for? Think of it as a magnetic attraction that attracts one person to another, where the one sees the other as the fulfillment of his life. The one sees the other as, you know, the one without whom he can't live. So what do you think? What is the purpose for this magnetic attraction of one person to another? It's that we might be drawn to God. It's that we might see in God the fulfillment of our being. It's that we might be drawn powerfully, like with a magnetic force, with a gravitational force, towards our God. And this exists in every human soul. And we only don't feel it because we've covered it up with so many other things. We've allowed so many other things to get in the way. But the human soul is drawn with the power of eros towards God. We're wrong to think of eros as romantic love. Sure, it exists in that context, but the larger context, the greater context, the ultimate context, the context of eternity, is that what it is our being drawn powerfully towards God. This is how the Holy Fathers speak of it. They say we must have eros towards God. Our heart must come alive. We must be aware of this longing, deep longing. And this is how they speak of love for God. Not just, you know, it's nice, you know, God made us, it's nice to obey him or something like that. No, but that the soul can't live without him. It's like he's the air that we breathe. We can't breathe. We can't live without the air of God, the fragrance of the kingdom of heaven. We can't live without his life. And so this is the true purpose of eros. And of course, that's become very much distorted in our minds and in our hearts and in the culture around us, where we're looking for our fulfillment in another human being. This is not the right way even for Christians to see marriage. You're not fulfilled in the other one. The husband's not fulfilled by the wife. The wife's not fulfilled by the husband. Both of you together are fulfilled by Christ. Both of you together. And the marriage is the husband and the wife together with Christ. That's what a marriage is. And if it's not that, then it's missing the most important component, if it's missing Christ. So there's a distortion where, rather than having God as the true object of our eros, of that force within us, of that capacity of our soul, rather than having God, we put other things there in place of God, and we call those things idols. That's the proper name for them. We call them other things, but the proper name is that it's an idol. And so people have this quest for romantic fulfillment, but that's an idol that they're worshiping. It's not the real thing. The real thing never excludes God. It never excludes Christ. But Christ is in the center of a true marriage. But when it's idolatrous, then Christ is forgotten, and God is forgotten, and eros is misguided and misdirected, and it goes from bad to worse. And that's what we see in our society. We have a saint who's commemorated in the church on February 13th, so yesterday. Another saint, besides Saint Valentine, who gives us a wonderful image and example of what it is to have our soul directed towards God with eros, with true love that is a longing love. A longing love, a yearning love. And this saint is Saint Martinian. Saint Martinian was a monk. He lived the monastic life for many years. But at a certain point, the devil decided to instigate a temptation to try to bring Saint Martinian down. He was living this holy, godly life, and the enemy wanted to bring him down. So he found a certain prostitute and inspired her with this evil inspiration to go and to seduce Saint Martinian. So she, you know, she had heard of him, she knew where he lived, and this idea came into her. I can seduce this quote-unquote holy monk. We'll see how holy he is, you know, when I come and start seducing him. So this is what she did. She waited until it was a cold, stormy night, and she went knocking on his door and begged him to let her in, saying, you know, I'm a wandering pilgrim, and I have nowhere to stay, and if I stay out here, I'll freeze to death. Please take pity on me, take mercy on me, you know, show me mercy. And so Saint Martinian, being a merciful person, not wanting her to suffer, invited her in, gave her a corner where she could stay, you know, please, you know, make yourself at home here. And then he went about his business. But she didn't allow him to go about his business. Immediately, she started trying to seduce him. Now, Saint Martinian, although he had been struggling with his passions for many years, he felt his own weakness. He felt that he might very easily be seduced. And when he sensed that inside of himself, there was a struggle, but he had something inside of him that was more powerful than that passion. And do you know what that was? It was eros directed towards God. He knew that God was his beloved, that God was the one that he couldn't live without. And he knew that if he lost that connection with God, he would die. And so he said, I have a difficult choice to make here. So he didn't rationalize, he didn't justify, he didn't excuse himself. He didn't say, oh, it's not a big deal. He fought with tremendous violence against that passion. And do you know what he did to preserve himself from falling into sin and from breaking his connection with God, from losing that grace, to keep himself from betraying God, from being faithless to God? Do you know what he did? He made a fire, because it was like, I've got this fire that's coming into being inside of my soul, this sinful fire, this deadly fire, and I've got to fight fire with fire. So he kindled a fire, and he stepped into it and stood in the fire while his feet were burned, while his legs began to be burned. And this woman saw what he did in order to escape from being tempted, and she was horrified because she realized that she had driven him to this. And immediately she repented. She started weeping. Her heart changed. And so Saint Martinian, because of his eros for God, because of this incredible love he had for God, he refused to be faithless, to be unfaithful to God. And he repelled the sin, and he saved this woman also, because her heart changed, and after that she led a godly life. She became a nun. She dedicated her heart to Christ. She found the true one that her heart belonged to. She reoriented herself and redirected that passion of eros in herself. So we see Saint Martinian as an incredible example of what it is to have true divine eros. Also on this day, we remember the Canaanite woman. That's the gospel that we just heard. How the Lord came to the region of Tyre and Sidon, and there was this woman. She was a pagan woman. She wasn't a Jew, you know. But she had begun somehow to be aware of the true God, and to be aware that Jesus Christ was something incredible. And she knew that he had the possibility, he had the ability to heal. And so she came with her daughter, who was demon-possessed. And she began begging the Lord, please, Lord, heal her. Heal my daughter. Save her. What does the Lord say? What's the Lord doing? He says to her, I came not you know, for the Gentiles, but for the lost sheep of Israel. I came for my people. What's he doing? He's testing her. What does God do with us? Sometimes he plays hard to get. And this is in order to elicit greater faith in us, greater hope, greater love. It's in order to kindle the fire of Eros within us. When we recognize that, no, you're the one, Lord. You're the one I need. And he says, are you sure? Are you sure? Yes, Lord, you're the one. He wants that fire of love for him to grow in us. And so, like a masterful artist, like a masterful gardener, you know, he causes the growth of this love within this woman. So yes, he's playing hard to get. He wants her to pursue him. And this is what she does. She says, yes, Lord. Yes, Lord. But even the dogs, he says, of course, I forgot to mention, he says, it's not good to take the food, the bread from the children and give it to the little dogs, right? It's not good to take the food that's intended for the children and to give it to the little dogs. Again, he's testing her faith. And she says, yes, Lord, but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the table, from the master's table. And so she shows her faith. And she's not easily put off. She doesn't give up. She keeps pursuing him and begging him, Lord, heal me. Lord, heal my daughter. Lord, you're our only hope. And so we see that faith come alive in her, that faith that gives birth to hope and gives birth to genuine love, to the eros, the longing love for God. So yes, the Lord is sometimes with us, he'll play hard to get. Sometimes, although he's wooing us, he's always wooing us, he's always coming to us, he's always knocking on our door. And yet, sometimes he takes a step back in order for us to pursue him, so that we can become stronger in our resolve to be faithful to him, not to fall away, to love him with our whole being. This is what he wants to elicit from us, warm faith, warm love. And I want to end by mentioning Saint Porphyrios, Saint Porphyrios, that saint of the 20th century. Many of you are familiar with the book Wounded by Love, which gives an account of his life and also gives many of his own talks, his own words, where he very beautifully expresses this concept of divine eros. And that's really the theme of the book, Wounded by Love. That's a phrase that comes from the Song of Songs, or the Song of Solomon, which is like a love poem about, you know, the bride and the groom, and how they're doing this kind of romantic dance with each other. But it talks, in that book, it uses this phrase, I'm wounded by love. Like my heart is wounded with this wound, and now I can't live without you. I can't live without you. Well, and you know, there's all of this, passionate, popular songs that have this kind of language. You know, I can't live without you. I need you. I've got to have you. I want you. You know, all of these kinds of things. And when it's directed towards another human being, there's a distortion in that, and it leads us astray. But if we take those same thoughts, and now we put them in the context of our relationship with God, then we say, yes, that's all true. We need him. We should want him. We can't live without him. All of that's true. Well, Saint Porphyrios expresses this incredibly in this passage that I want to read to you. He says this, whoever wants to become a Christian first must become a poet. That's what it is. You must suffer. You must love and suffer. Suffer for the one you love. Love makes effort for the loved one. She runs all through the night. She stays awake. She stains her feet with blood in order to meet her beloved. She makes sacrifices and disregards all impediments, threats, and difficulties for the sake of the loved one. Love towards Christ is something even higher, infinitely higher. And when we say love, we don't mean the virtues that we will acquire, but the heart that is pervaded by love towards Christ and others. We need to turn everything in this direction. Do we see a mother with her child in her arms and bending to give the child a kiss, her heart overflowing with emotion? Do we notice how her face lights up as she holds her little angel? These things do not escape a person with love of God. He sees them and is impressed by them. And he says, if only I had those emotions towards my God, towards my Holy Lady and our saints. Look, that's how we must love Christ our God. You desire it, you want it, and with the grace of God you acquire it. But are we inflamed by love for Christ? Do we run to the Beloved when we are exhausted to find rest in prayer? Or do we do it, prayer, do we do our prayers as a burdensome duty and say, now I have to do my prayers and prostrations? What's missing when we feel like this? Divine Eros is what's missing. Divine Eros is what inspires real prayer in us. And it's what we must beg the Lord for, so that we might live our whole life as Christians with inspiration, not just going through the motions, not somehow hypocritically following certain rules or outwardly expressing our faith, using pious words and the rest, but that we might sincerely with our whole hearts seek God as our most beloved one, seek His life, recognize that we can't live without Him, and find our fulfillment in Him. And together with Saint Valentine and Saint Porphyrios and Saint Martinian and all the saints, may we glorify God with all our hearts, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, always, now, and ever, and unto each.